Welcome to Kshir Akstava Kabbalah Parshas Chukat. We know that one of the parshios in Parshas Chukat, which occupies the portion very, very much, is the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu, the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu that causes him to be denied entry into Eretz Yisrael. And of course we know that there are many, many different perushim, many different explanations as to what exactly went wrong. It's not exactly clear in the psukim what the mistake was exactly. I want to share a few passages from the Akstava Kabbalah where he develops some different and novel ideas regarding the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu. He starts off quoting from a sefer that he quotes very, very frequently, the Ein Levanon, where the Ein Levanon makes the following comments. He's going to quote it in verbatim. Da, ki divrei ha-Torah nimshalim l'mayim, shenemar hoi kotzomei l'chul l'mayim. Find that the pasuk in Yeshaya compares words of Torah to water. V'lev ha-adam nimshal l'evan. Man's heart is also compared to a stone. Shekoshelach kokbo divrei ha-Torah v'anitzvah. It's difficult to engrave the words of Torah upon a person's heart, because again, the person's heart in that sense is stony. It's difficult to, you know, to penetrate. V'chein also Hashem yisbarach baruch hu pele gadol b'midbar lahotzi mayim min ha-tzur min ha-sela. Therefore, we find that twice, once back in Parshas Beshalach, and once in Parshas Chukas, the Ribbono Shel Olam gives water to Klal Yisrael by causing water to emit, to be emitted from a stone. If the people needed water, HaKadosh Baruch Hu certainly could have just caused a lot of rain to come down. He could have caused underground springs to open up and reveal water to the people in that way. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu perform this unusual miracle to bring water out of the stone? Aval Asra Kain Lelamid Yisrael Das. So right, the Yain Levanon, the idea of bringing water out of the stone is not just because they wanted water, but there's an imagery that's associated with the idea of bringing water out of the stone, and that's as follows. Aval Pishi Yetzer Halev Ra. Even though we all have a Yetzirah, but who negativo lachshira la'atara v'amitzvah, and on some level, it's unnatural for us to subjugate ourselves to the demands of Torah, mikomakom efshar hadavah. You should know that subjugating ourselves to the will of Torah is possible. Even when it seems difficult, it's possible. And the imagery behind the idea that you can get the water out of a stone is to convey the notion that you can engrave words of Torah upon the heart of the individual, even when it seems incredibly difficult. Because, as Chazal say, right? If a person sincerely wants to do the right thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help him out. Just as the rough and tough stone unnaturally spews forth water, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it the ability to do so, so too, a man's heart, as stony as it may be, can be transformed into a spring of water, of Divrei Torah, which emerge forth from the person's heart. Right? So, you know, the Yain Levanon has developed this idea that the nature in which water was given to the people is not arbitrary. There's a message in the very way in which the water is given.
Does anyone believe that by hitting a stone, that's a natural way of getting water? If I go around hitting a building, is water going to spout out?
That depends. So depends which building, you know.
So it's just the means, or I don't want to say slight technicality, how the issue was approached. Granted, he didn't listen to Hashem, and he did something differently. Oh. But who in his right mind would believe that hitting a stone, a dry stone, water would come out?
Oh, so the question Shelley's asking, and it's a fundamental question. You know, in the end of the day, it's miraculous to hit a stone and draw out water. So, you know, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't speak to it, all right, you know, so it's not the A-plus way of doing things, but what's so terrible? So let's wait a minute. We'll see how the Yain Levanon develops his thought to relate to exactly this question. Ella, shebitchila kasha la'adam hatosa l'chachma. So, truth be told, it's possible for a person to take his stony heart and to bring water out of it. In other words, to cause Torah to come out and to impact upon his heart. But let's be honest, certainly in the beginning stages, it's difficult. It's tzarich muster gadol. A person to imprint Torah upon his heart needs a lot of muster, needs to really work on himself. So the first time around, again, there are two times in Chumash where Moshe Rabbeinu brings water out of the stone. So back in Refidim, in the end of Parshas Bishalach, where the people are just beginning to be exposed to Torah, it's even before Matan Torah, it's before Maimed Har Sinai. So we understand that it's going to be very difficult to get the people to have water come out of their own stony hearts. So Moshe Rabbeinu is told, go over to the rock and strike it. There Moshe Rabbeinu does strike the rock, and the Ribbono Shel Olam has no complaints against Moshe Rabbeinu for striking the rock, and it's not a sin for striking the rock, and it's great that he did that. Ki bo'eslahi hayo libam adayin leib evan. At that time, when Klal Yisrael had just left Mitzrayim, their hearts really were stone, and they really needed, so to speak, to jumpstart the engine. They really needed a good clap in order to be able to get Torah to come out of their hearts. So Moshe Rabbeinu symbolically goes and he strikes the stone to get the stone to give forth water. However, b'lochein b'sof arba'im shana kishen nitan lohem habe'er siva v'dibartem el hasela lo sheyakeyu. But things had changed, says the Yain Levonim, 40 years later. 40 years later, the people were wiser. For 40 years, they had gotten the Torah. For 40 years, they had received the Mon. They had gotten the Be'er. After 40 years, they weren't neophytes anymore. They weren't just beginners who had to be hit in order to make sure that Torah would come out of their hearts. There, so Moshe Rabbeinu was told, V'dibartem el hasela. After 40 years, you don't have to hit the stone anymore. You can just speak to it. Why? Lahoros ki hador ahu libam leiv basa. The message that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to give to the people was, 40 years later, you've progressed. Your heart is not that stony heart anymore. Your heart is a heart of flesh, to use the pasuk from Yechezkel. And as such, the soft, gentle touch is going to work. All I have to do is speak to the stone. All I have to do is speak to Klal Yisrael to get them to embrace the dictates of Torah. Uvetiv'eyem ostim Torah u'mitzvah. By 40 years later, Klal Yisrael naturally are inclined to perform Torah and mitzvah.
In the 40 years, when was the Masa
in the first year, right in the beginning. Right in the beginning. Yeah. How do we know that second generation, again, the 40 years later, had reached some kind of level that the first generation leaving Mitzrayim had not reached? So he quotes a few psukim. Al ador ahu, concerning that second generation, the generation who actually entered Eretz Yisrael, the generation of 40 years later, concerning that door, that generation, it says, V'atem adveikim v'ashem elokeichem chayim kulchem ayom. Right, you who cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're all alive today. Atem adveikim v'ashem elokeichem. You cling to Hashem. V'zeu dor deya shenochalu es ha'aretz. This is the generation of understanding who merited to come into Eretz Yisrael. It's very interesting. We often use the term Dor Deya to refer to the generation that left Egypt. The Yain Levanon goes in a different direction. He uses the term Dor Deya to refer to the generation that entered Eretz Yisrael, because after all, the generation that had left Mitzrayim saw incredible things, but they were all doomed to die out in the desert. It's the generation that went to Eretz Yisrael that was zocha to things that earlier generation was not zocha to. U'ka'omro v'lo nosan Hashem lochem leiv lo das ve'inayim l'ros v'zayim l'shmoa ad ayom hazeh. That's the meaning of a pasuk which appears at the end of Chumash. Moshe Rabbeinu tells that generation 40 years later, up until this day, Hashem has not given you a heart to understand properly, or eyes to see properly, or ears to hear properly. Well, what does that mean? So says the Yael of Honor, it means you, the second generation, have merited things that your fathers did not merit. Your fathers didn't really understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They didn't have a lev lahavin. They didn't have a heart to really understand, a lev ladas. They didn't really have a heart to understand and cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have it. You have something they don't have. Ki ador shel afanav lo zachu lelev. The previous generation didn't have that heart of understanding. So therefore, v'ulai kisharavu b'mei kodesh, chashav Moshe shem chaserim b'libam lev evan. When the people said at Kodesh, at Mei Meriva, we want water, Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh, here we go again. This is the same story that we had 40 years before, that same heart of stone. He said, these people, they haven't learned anything in 40 years. V'lochein omar lahem shimun ha'amorim. That's what he says to them. Listen, you rebellious ones. U'kafi machshav tobo l'chlau tos lahakos es hasela k'moshe also be received in. So therefore, he said, nothing has changed. I'm going to hit the rock just like I hit the rock 40 years ago. Because the people still need a... Apparently, the people are still at that early stage where they have to be smacked in order to pledge their allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He underestimated the people that he was dealing with at that time. In truth, by not speaking to the stone, it's not just, okay, you speak to the stone, you hit the stone, what do we care? In the end of the day, you know, you'll get the water one way or the other. Yeah. But there was a much more fundamental issue over here. Moshe Rabbeinu clearly didn't understand the people that he was dealing with. Now, Ad Kan, that's the end of the quotation from the Yain Levanon. But we can perhaps build on this idea of the Yain Levanon, you know, in the following way. And again, I don't think it's a very big stretch from what he's saying. I think this is just a natural consequence, the natural follow-up to the Yain Levanon. Okay, no, so he didn't speak to the stone, he hit the stone. So why is that so terrible? I mean, you lose your whole right to go into Eretz Yisrael because of one little mistake. That's it. You know, one strike and you're out. That's how it works by Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so you can answer, tzadikim kechut asayra, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges tzadikim with great precision, and, you know, okay, you can answer that. But it could be that there's a more fundamental issue. It's not that Moshe Rabbeinu's sin per se is necessarily so great, but clearly, if you don't understand the people you're leading, you're not going to do a good job leading them. Moshe Rabbeinu is now poised to become the leader of this next generation, and basically HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him, you're misreading the generation. You're using the tactics of 40 years ago to deal with the people of today. It's not that you're a sinner. It's not that makes you a bad person, Moshe Rabbeinu. But it does compromise your ability to be able to lead them when you go into Eretz Yisrael. If you're going to still use yesterday's approach for today's problems, so you have to move on. It's not going to work.
But the question still, at least for me, exists. Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Rabbeinu. Why would I think that someone of that high madrega, granted all you and wasn't perfect, man who spoke to God face to face, is going to make the decision that God told him that he's going to understand Mei's trail better than God, and he's going to do it in his own way? I mean, how could you assume that someone like that is not following orders or wouldn't follow orders?
Right.
Even if he had good logic.
So the question is, again, it's an excellent question. It's all these essential questions that we deal with the parsha of the Mei Meriva. You know, bottom line, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them, V'dibartem el ha'sela. Right? Speak to the rock. Moshe Rabbeinu, for whatever his story is, says, no, I'm going to go hit the rock. So how do you do that? How does that come off? Right? So let me skip a little bit in the Haksav HaKabbalah and address that question directly, because he deals with it in trying, and we'll put that together with the Yain Levanon, who says that, you know, the mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu is ultimately that he misreads the character of the people that he's dealing with, and we're adding to that and suggesting that, you know, isn't a sin per se, but it reveals enough of a difficulty in leading the people. If you don't understand the people you're leading, you can't lead them. It's not going to work. that prevents Moshe Rabbeinu from going into Eretz Yisrael.
Who said that he would be the leader when he went to Eretz Yisrael? He should have taken over here,
So the question is, Moshe Rabbeinu, by the way, according to the Medrash, asks this, right? He says, okay, so I won't go in as the leader of Klal Yisrael. Right, so I think, again, just based on experience, if somebody of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu went into Eretz Yisrael with Klal Yisrael, there's no way that he could be anything other than the leader. Right? In other words, his shadow would be so overwhelming that nobody else, Yehoshua, would not be able to lead, you know, in light of the fact that his great Rebbe, who had received the Torah, Mipi HaGevura, was still there. Even if Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, you're in charge, you make the decisions, I'm just a schlepper, I'm just over here, you know, I'm just doing my thing, I retired, I'm learning in a kollel in the morning, just, you know, leave me alone. It's not going to work. I mean, experientially, you know, it doesn't work like that.
Isn't it the freedom of the
But in other words, what would happen is that Moshe Rabbeinu would go into Eretz Yisrael and he would end up being the leader, and the leadership would be ineffective and would be harmful. So in other words, it's better for Klal Yisrael, for Yehoshua to take over with acknowledging that Yehoshua is not Moshe Rabbeinu, but still, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu's presence would prevent Klal Yisrael from being able to move forward. Yeah.
So we're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu misread
state, right.
So how can it be that he was able to see the future, but he couldn't see what was right in front of him? It doesn't make sense. Well, it's just caliber that he didn't understand what was going on.
I guess you see. I mean, again, it's an excellent question. I guess you see that even the Adon HaNeviim, you know, sometimes if things are revealed to you, you get it. But even, you know, things are not revealed to you. Yeah, I hear, but in other words, in Kol Zeh, you see that sometimes people cannot see, even great people cannot see what's right in front of them. Yeah.
I wonder if any of this has any relationship to something that we used to say that Moshe did not communicate with God for 38 years. I don't know if he really didn't communicate with him, or he only communicated with him in the old way.
It's interesting. Yeah.
There was no communication.
I'm not sure. I think by this time already, the assumption is that communication came back, because after all, you know, Rabbanu Shalom did speak to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, you know, v'dibartim el ha'sela. Let me go back, Mishteli ad Sheli, let me go back to the first Sheli question. And how does v'dibartim el ha'sela, you know, how can Moshe Rabbeinu go against an explicit command of God, speak to the stone? So the Aksava Kabbalah writes as follows. Let me just get the citation. Second.
Thank you.
So he makes the following comment, which, again, it doesn't directly address it. I had in my head that there was something that directly addressed it a little bit more, but I think this idea does address to some extent. The Pasuk has said, "V'dibartem el hasel al einayim," speak to the rock in front of their eyes. So, "Ein lefarish le'einayim al eiver hara'os," you know, doesn't mean literally that Moshe Rabbeinu was told speak to the rock in front of their eyes, literally. Because the truth is, if you want to be literal, speak to the rock in front of their, you know, in the presence of their ears. In other words, speaking is something that you hear as opposed to something that you see. Yeah. Right, no. He quotes two psukim where we find that speaking in someone's presence is called, is the phrase which is used is to speak in the ears of, speak to Ephron in the ears of the Am Ha'aris, the people of the land, right? And he quotes psukim to that effect. Perhaps when the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "V'dibartem al hasela le'ineihem," it means not just speak to the rock in front of them, but get them to understand. In other words, the idea of ayin, the idea of seeing something, means not just to see something literally, physically, but to comprehend something. Right? So for instance, we find in the very beginning of Bereishis, "V'tipokachna einei shneihem." After Adam and Chava eat from the Eitz Hadas, their eyes opened up. Now again, that doesn't mean literally that their eyes were closed before. It means they achieved a certain level of understanding they had not had beforehand. Right? So perhaps V'hoyo im Kain ha'mechuvon mimenu yisparach v'zeho inyi la'oreb amdasu t'vuna al yoker v'chashivos dibor eloki v'tzivoyer aleyem v'zeho le'eneyem. So perhaps what the Ribbono Shel Olam had in mind, "V'dibartem el hasel al einayim," is speak to the rock in such a way that a message is given to them. Right? Speak to the rock in such a way that it opens up their eyes and gets them to understand better how Torah should be a part of their souls. Once you start interpreting the phrase "V'dibartem el hasel al einayim" in that non-literal sense, so it's possible to see how Moshe Rabbeinu might have said as follows. The point of it's not speaking to the rock versus hitting the rock. Remember, you know, this is the point the Ramban makes in his commentary on Rashi. The Ramban writes that the Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu, "Kach es amata," right? So go over to the rock with the stick. If you're going over with the stick, what are you supposed to do with it other than hit the rock? So v'dibartem el hasel al einayim means speak to the rock, speak about the rock. El sometimes in Hebrew can mean about, as opposed to two. Speak, imagine the following translation of the words of Hashem. Go take your stick and speak about the rock in a way to get the Jewish people to understand the message that the rock is supposed to teach them. Now again, granted that's not the obvious interpretation of the phrase, but it's a plausible interpretation of the phrase. And, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu chooses to understand the phrase in that way. In his mind, he's not going against the you know, the word of Hashem. In his mind, he's interpreting what Hashem said to him, you know, do things by the rock, speak about the rock in such a way that it will cause Klal Yisrael to have a greater level of understanding.
But that's the real Chaysh. So why didn't God curse him slack? He didn't do anything. It's his interpretation of the events, so he didn't throw a hakas against the
100%. So again,
why didn't he suffer with it?
So we go back to the Ein Levanon. In other words, it's not so much a punishment, oh, I said X, you did Y, but you're demonstrating through your actions.
You don't understand your people.
Right? In other words, it's as in a, let's say, in a professional context, you know, a person can be very devoted and be doing everything he's supposed to do, but he just doesn't do the job right. If he doesn't do the job right, so at a certain point, the boss may say to him, look, you know, you're a wonderful person, a valuable employee, but, you know, it's not working out, you know? So the same thing by Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't have tainas on you as somebody who's lahak is going against me, but the way you chose to interpret and carry out this situation shows that, you know, you're out of touch, and you're not able to relate to the people the way that one is supposed to relate to them. Let me throw in one more idea, and then we'll see a little bit more after we pick up after Ma'ariv. So Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the people, and he says, "Hamin hasela hazen otzi lochem moyim." Right? Shall we bring forth water from you from this rock? The Ramban asked the following kasha. He says, "What was that question all about?" It sounds like a way to interpret the question is Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to Klal Yisrael, do you think it's possible that Hashem can bring water forth from the rock? Hamin hasela hazen osilo chemoyim? And to that the Ramban says, cholila, cholila, shiyehe atema limenius. What a terrible question. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the question to people and says, what do you think? You think Hashem can bring forth water from the rock? The answer is yes, of course he can bring forth water from the rock. Hayipalei Hashem dova. We all know that. Moshe Rabbeinu knows that. The people know that. So what's Moshe Rabbeinu asking? So the Ramban has to struggle to try to explain what the question is. You know, he says sometimes they're rhetorical questions where we know that the answer is yes, right? Can Hashem do this? Of course he can do it. But then, of course, that begs the question. So again, then why phrase it like a question? So the Ksav HaKabbalah suggests the following very sharp interpretation. It's all a question of where you put the emphasis in the phrase. So we read the pasuk, "Hamin hasela hazen otzilo chemoyim," shall we bring forth water from this rock? Says Ksav HaKabbalah, you put the stress on the wrong word. The salient word in the phrase is lochem. Hamin hasela hazen otzi lochem mayim. Can we bring forth water from this rock for the likes of you? Meaning, Hashem for sure can do it. That's not the question. But do you people think you're deserving of getting water from the rock? Let's see. You know? Now, this interpretation fits in one piece with the Yain Levonon that the Ksav HaKabbalah quoted before. Moshe Rabbeinu was frustrated with the people, and he sells them short. Hamin hasela hazen otzi lochem moyim? Do you think you're the type of people who deserve to get water out of a rock? Even by striking it, right? Certainly by speaking to it, you're not on that madrega. The idea of water from the rock is to show that the water of Torah can pierce even your stony heart. Do you think you're holding by that? I'm not so sure you're holding by that, says Moshe Rabbeinu to Klal Yisrael. So according to this interpretation, not only is the Ramban's kasha answered, but it also furthers this interpretation of the Ein Levonon, that part of what the issue is over here is that Moshe Rabbeinu was selling the people short in terms of his understanding of where they're at. Bez Hashem will pick up after Ma'ariv. Welcome to the second half of the Shirak Sava Kabbalah Parshas Chukat. We saw how the Ksav HaKabbalah, building on the ideas of the Yain Levonon, writes that part of the chait of the Mei Meriva was that Moshe Rabbeinu underestimated the quality of the people that he was dealing with. 40 years before, when faced with a similar situation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told him, hit the rock and bring forth water. The symbolism behind that said the Yain Levonon meant that a person's heart may be like stone, and sometimes you have to hit it in order to get Torah, water, to flow from that heart. However, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't fully understand that the people 40 years later had matured, they had developed, they were at a point where it was easier to get them to embrace Torah and make it a part of their lives, and that would have been symbolized by speaking to the stone, speaking to the rock, and having the water come forth from the rock in that way, by by hitting the rock, he showed that, you know, he didn't quite appreciate the people in front of him. And that's what he said. Amin hasela hazeh, not see lochen loyim. Are you deserving of getting water out of this rock? Moshe Rabbeinu, again, the emphasis is on, you know, you're not being deserving to have this particular miracle. So continuing on that line, and that line of thought, the Ksava Kabbalah comments on the pasuk that describes Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to the people. He says, "Shimu na amorim, amin asela hazeno si lachem oyim." L'yeshmi Rabbu Seinu chatu Moshe Rabbeinu b'zeh shikilu b'chvod Yisrael amar lehem shimu na amorim. Ramazalzel b'kavod arsivu kimuchalul es Hashem. He quotes the Abarbanel, and the Abarbanel in this regard is building, and to some extent, on the words of the Rabbeinu Chananel, that the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu is to make light of the covet of the tzibur. He says to them, Shimuna Hamorim, listen, O you rebellious ones. How do you speak to people that way? Again, in the very memorable phrase of the Abarbanel, Hamazalzel b'covet tzibur, if you make light of the honor of the community, Ki'ilu Mechalel es Hashem, it's like you desecrate God's name itself. A very, very striking lashon. Again, I wouldn't say it, but the Abarbanel says it. You know, it's a very, very striking lashon. V'amefarshim to'anu al zeh. And other Mefarshim have complaints or problems with that interpretation. They say as follows. In Cain, Lama shana b'cheit zeh v'amar lahem harbe yoser mizilzul zeh. V'amar b'mishnah Torah ma'amrim ha'yisem im Hashem miyom dati eschem. A little bit later on in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Tes, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, at the very end of his life, as he's reviewing everything that took place in the 40 years of the desert, Ma'amrim ha'yisem im Hashem miyom dati eschem. You've been rebellious against the Ribbono Shel Olam from the day that I knew you. So the Mefarshim asked against the Barbanel, you know, if Shimuna Hamorim was so terrible that it may have been the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu was denied entry into Eretz Yisrael, so what do you make of the pasuk Mamrim Heisem Yom Dati Eschem? Wasn't not just that you're Morim, that you're rebellious in this one instance. From the day that I knew you, you've been rebellious against the Ribbono Shel Olam. And there, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't seem to be called to account for that particular statement.
And we say there's a chiluk between how
okay, right. You know, you could answer like that. Rabbi Rubin says, "Mamim hayisem im Hashem." It's one thing to call people, you know, rebellious against Hashem. Shimon ha'amorim, you know, sounds like you're rebelling against me, right? So that could be a chiluk, very, very, very much so. That could be a distinction between the two. At the same time, if you go back to the statement of the Abarbanel, Mezalzel b'kavod tzibur, you know, it seems like that should apply whether you're making light of them because they rebel against Hashem or because they rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. But I hear the chiluk. He wants to suggest something else. The angels are taina l'daiti. In my opinion, says Aksava Kabbalah, there's no question for Mamrim Hayisim in Hashem as follows. Kikan hizil b'chvod anoshim shlochotu. The real taina against Moshe Rabbeinu here in Chukas is not that he degrades the people, he degrades innocent people. What do you mean by that? Ki amikra lo hodianu rak mechet ha'am. Pay careful attention as to who are the sinners over here. Right? It says, Perek Chav Pasuk Gimel, Vayarev ha'am im Moshe. The people fought with Moshe Rabbeinu. Sheim ha'pchusim hanikroim erev rav. The ha'am are the erev rav. The erev rav, they're responsible for everything in the midbar, right? But the what's that? Right. So the question is, you know, who are these erev rav? I mean, this was 40 years later. I mean, the original erev rav originally died. So l'chari doesn't mean the original erev rav. You know, the Erev Rav Olo Itam, the ones who left Mitzrayim, because they would have been dead already by this time. L'chari, what Aksava Kabbalah means is people who were similar to the Erev Rav. Ha'am, you know, the low lives, relatively speaking, among the people. So he writes, Aval Ha'edah, but in contrast, the Edah, the congregation, Heim Adas Yisrael Haksherim Hanikolim Kahal Hashem. Those are the Jews who were really of good caliber. Lo Dibru Me'uma B'inyan Zeh. They didn't complain about the lack of water. It was Vayarev Ha'am in Moshe. Okay, so some people, you know, who are at the periphery of the Jewish people on every level, religiously, socially, they kvetch. So they kvetch. So Moshe Rabbeinu takes it out on the people who are, you know, fine, upstanding individuals. Take a look, he says. Me'ele Omar Kro. Right? The pasuk says concerning the people who were upstanding individuals. Shiloha Yomaim Lo Edom, Pasuk Beis. There was no water for the Edom. Edom meaning the people of stature. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. They gathered together on Moshe and Aaron. So what did they do when they gathered together? Lo shomanu mehem afibur kal rakshin ikalu. The pasuk only says they gathered against Moshe and Aaron. It doesn't say they complained. Ulay lo haisto rak leman habakasha levad mimoshe v'Aaron. She started with tefilasim hashkitz dimon nafshosam. Maybe vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron means they gathered together with Moshe and Aaron. They said, my dear Moshe and Aaron, would you mind going and davening for us before the Ribbono Shel Olam so that we could get water? A very appropriate and proper response to the tragedy. In other words, the way the Aksava Kabbalah Levi's Psukim based in Gimel is that we're talking about two different groups of people. There are two different reactions to the absence of water. On the one hand, V'lohoyo Maim Lo Eidah V'yikalu Amoshe V'yal Aaron. The Eidah, the people who are people of stature, go to Moshe and Aaron and perhaps say, please daven for us. But then Gimel Vayarev Ha'am Moshe, the people, the lower class people, they got into a fight with Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayomru Lamar, V'lu Govanu B'Gvachenu L'fnei Hashem. They're the ones who start kvetching. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu, I understand you have tainas against the lower strata of people who are fighting with you and speaking to you in such a disrespectful manner, but it doesn't justify getting angry at everybody. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam say to Moshe Rabbeinu? So, Pasuk Ches, Kachas Hamata, V'hakel Es Ha'edo, Ato V'Aaron Ochicho. Who's invited to this get together in front of the rock? Not the Om. The Om can sit and kvetch. The Eidah, the Choshuva people are invited. They should see the miracle which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to perform. V'chein Moshe lo ikil es ha'am ha'pchusim lefnei ha'sela rak ha'eidah shenikalu alam k'moshe kasuv v'yakilu Moshe v'Aaron. Who did Moshe and Aaron ultimately bring in front of the rock? So it says in Pasuk Yud, v'yakilu Moshe v'Aaron es ha'kohol el p'nei ha'sela. So who's this kohol? We had the Om, we had the Eidah, now all of a sudden we have the Kohol. So says Aksava Kabbalah, the Kohol is the Eidah. I thought you called them an Eidah. Right, but what do we say the Eidah did? V'lo ha'yamayim lo Eidah, v'yikoalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. So it says v'yikoalu. So v'yikoalu, they assembled, means the Kohol. It's the same group of people. So who was invited to stand in front of the Sela? All of the people who had asked Moshe Rabbeinu to daven. So now Moshe Rabbeinu is standing in front of the chashuvim of Klal Yisrael, and what does he say to them? Shimuna Hamorim. Shimuna Hamorim. What are you talking about? Right? So that's what the Abarban Elzez says. Hamazalzel b'kavod atzibur. What are you talking about? You have complaints against the Om? They're in the back complaining. They're not here, you know. They're by the Kiddush Club, you know. They're not here. You're getting up, you know. It's like the Rav gets up in shul, and he rails against all the people who step out during the drasha. Chutzpah! How can these people step out during the drasha? What's wrong with you people? What do you mean? What's wrong with you people? We're here. We're listening to the drasha. You know, don't yell at us. We're here. So that's the Ribbono Shel Olam has a taina against Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why says the Aksava Kabbalah when Moshe Rabbeinu says later on, Mamrim Hayisim Hashem Yom Dati Eschem. There's nothing wrong with that. He's right. I mean, he's right about the he's right about the people who complain. But in this particular circumstance, it just didn't make sense for Moshe Rabbeinu to speak badly to people who themselves were not responsible for the actual sin.
Why is the Aram didn't go to
what's that?
Why is the Aram?
Oh, so that's a big question which the Mefarshim deal with. And how did Aram lose out, you know, in this whole thing? That he doesn't deal with directly. I mean, many Mefarshim talk about, you know, why Aram should have been included in this. Maybe it was just another sin that he did that was rolled over to the Chet Mei Meriva, that maybe in a way of understanding it. Or, you know, based on what the Ksava Kabbalah said before, it could be that the Ribbono Shel Olam just said, it's not so much a sin, but Moshe shows that he's not the right leader for the next generation. I mean, maybe Arab is part of that also. He's from the older generation.
If you understand the community,
yeah,
in the community there existed both the good people, the right, and the bad people.
Right.
Therefore, you understand the second pasuk when he's railing against the no goodness,
right,
because they were there also,
right.
But and he had to address them, especially saying, "No, you're amongst the good people, but I know who you are, and therefore right, you don't deserve to be bothered."
Right. So that
I was doomed, but you.
So that would be a somewhat different interpretation, yes, of Tzava Kabbalah. In other words, based on the same idea, you know, yeah, it's working with the same idea up to one point. In other words, the one divergence is that HaKahal means everybody. Right, and then Moshe Rabbeinu says, Shimon HaMorim.
Because they were there also, and he had to address them specifically because right, they were not nice people.
And then you'd have to say that the complaint of Mezalzel, the Kovet Sibur, means that still it's not right, you know, that the nice people should have to hear all of that Musar together with the people who were, right, that's how you have to interpret it. Yeah.
So it ends up by taste, is that
right, so Lechara, which I have to explain again, it's not conceivable that the were denied water, but Batesh Ta'eda Uviram, in immediately the ones who got the water immediately were the Eda, because after all they were there, right? And then okay, they shared the water, you know, with the but they were the immediate recipients of the water according to this interpretation.
I have a question. Did the Pashim talk about how the pasuk right before Aleph,
yeah,
talks about how Miriam passed away,
right,
and how this may have affected Moshe as a leader at that time?
Are you saying he was depressed over the loss of his sister? It's a very, very interesting idea. Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen that. It's a very interesting idea. In other words, that the sadness that the loss of his sister may have been right. In other words, he was. I hear it's a very, very interesting idea. Yeah.
You're going back and forth, but if you look at Pasuk 12, God says right there what it is. Yan lo hamatzin di lagishen. That's it.
What does that mean?
What does it mean? It means just what God says. That you didn't magnify my name in front of the whole Kahal of Hasislav.
Yeah, but what does that mean? In other words, does that mean that
he talks about how the first episode did with the slug and all of that, Moses yeah, said a lot of bad things about the Maestro, but he didn't say out loud, you know.
The point though I'm making is Yan lo emanta bi lahakti sheni is a somewhat ambiguous phrase as well. In other words,
he could have made a much bigger Kiddush Hashem by speaking to the rock.
By what? By speaking to the rock, by not saying Shimuna Hamorim, by not getting angry. In other words, you know, however you're going to interpret the sin, that's how you're going to have to interpret Yan lo emanta bi lahakti sheni, which, again, there are multiple interpretations of the sin. So, in other words, whatever, you know, that phrase doesn't necessarily help us pinpoint what the sin is unless you have a preconceived notion before you get to that pasuk. Meaning, yeah, you can look in Rashi, but Rashi had a certain mahalach as to how to explain what the sin was. Yeah.
For that, though, it reminded me to what Rob was saying about how Das Yisrael,
right,
you know, who's the Kav, who's the Eda.
Right.
You find that, I think, by Kairach, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu says, the new prophet, Moshe Aaron, they fell on the face, but they Kahal Adas Yisrael.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in Kairach or in Shlach HaKav,
right,
one.
Yes.
So you see that
Kahal and Eda are two ideas which are similar. Okay, you know, very good idea.
Why were these righteous people any different than the righteous people at the time of the
when you say that people were brought to be righteous, but they were punished because they didn't intercede.
Right.
So, here they didn't intercede either. Apparently, they didn't speak out against those who criticized me, Moshe.
Right, so you don't know how public the criticism of the is necessarily. In other words, if you're building an Egel HaZahav, it's kind of public, and the people who don't protest against it are held accountable for it. Here, a bunch of people are murmuring in the back, you know.
And no one heard this, no one realized
it. And maybe they did. Maybe they did protest. In other words, I guess, you know, we don't have enough evidence, you know, to point to their involvement or lack of involvement. So, right, but okay, again, you don't know how fast all of this is happening. Meaning, it's one thing if you build an Egel HaZahav and everyone's dancing around it, you know, your failure to respond is held against you. A bunch of people are kvetching, and you may or may not know about it. It may not make it, and Moshe Rabbeinu reacts immediately, and you don't even have time to react to those people. It could be that you're not held accountable for the fact that they're kvetching.
Also, the source of the kvetching, they didn't have water.
Right. Right. In other words, it's not just. Right, but I guess it's a little bit more understandable if you don't have water. Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't sure I understood the question that Rabbi
mentioned. No, I think it was just trying to bring out kahal adas are used in conjunction with one another, so that would support the idea that kahal and edah might be synonymous with one another. Yeah. Let me just add one more little knesh from the Aksava Kabbalah, which doesn't relate to all the things we've said before, but it's a very fascinating interpretation of the pasuk. The last pasuk in the story, Hema Mei Meriva Sherabu V'nei Yisrael Es Hashem, these are the waters of Meriva at which Klal Yisrael argued with Hashem, Vayikodesh Bom, and he was sanctified through them. What do those last two words mean? So, you know, you take a look in Rashi, other Mefarshim, they all give different interpretations, but the common denominator is that the word Vayikodesh, you know, comes from the word sanctified. But somehow there was some kind of Kiddush Hashem in some unusual way that came out over here. Either as Rashi writes, that the deaths of Tzadikim under such circumstances itself is a Kiddush Hashem, maybe as some of the Mefarshim write, that in the end of the day, even though he hit the rock as opposed to speaking to the rock, Vayikadesh Bam, still there was a Kiddush Hashem because it was a miracle. There's some of the Mefarshim write like that, the Rashbam and others write like that. But the Aksava Kabbalah gives a very, very fascinating interpretation. He writes, we find that the word Vayikadesh or Kadosh can actually mean Tameh. Something that is defiled. Right? So, for instance, he quotes a pasuk from Chagai, which we've been talking about in the Gemara Shirim Sachim, right? Chagai asks the Kohanim, if Tumah touches items in a certain fashion, Hayikdosh. Now, Hayikdosh, in that context, means will it become Tumah? Because Kadosh, as is pointed out by the Mefarshim on Chumash, just means set aside or separated. Right, and we find, by the way, in the context of Kilayim, Pentukdash, Hamleya, Hazera, Shetizra, don't mix seeds together, Pentukdash. Not that lest it become holy, lest it become awesome. Right? So he writes as follows. What is Vayikodesh Bam? Al Yidei Meriva Zo, Nolda Toma Binafshosam. Bam refers to Klal Yisrael. Through the Meriva by Yikodesh Bam, Tumah entered into the hearts of Klal Yisrael. They walked away, as much as Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron walked away diminished by this whole episode. They were prevented from going into Eretz Yisrael. The real losers, you know, in a certain sense, were Klal Yisrael themselves, because as a result of their fighting, whoever fought, the whoever it was, as a result of this whole episode by Yikodesh Bam, right, there was Tumah that came about through them, you know, through the involvement of Klal Yisrael over here. Klal Yisrael lost their leaders, you know, they were the big losers in the end of the day, you know, because of this whole episode that had taken place. It's he roots this, as he so often does, in a Mechilta de Rashbi. Again, for all that, the Ksava Kabbalah was the Yekka, but he quotes Zohar left and right. apparently the two things can go together. So he writes, the Mechilta de Rashbi writes, Vayikodesh, lav l'shivcha iyu hacha. Vayikodesh is not meant positively over here, but rather, kumad de'inu nista'avu be'. Is to indicate that Klal Yisrael became Tomei through this episode. So Vayikodesh Bom, says the Mechilta de Rashbi, that's the way we understand it. And again, it's a very, very different, unusual way of interpreting the last words in the episode.
Did you address the same word one pasuk earlier by Yad, Roman to be Clearly,
right.
That's not the same.
Right. But again, you know, the very fact that the word Kadosh can mean different things in different contexts, you know, is something we do see. You know, Pentukta Shamle Azera Shetizra Hayikdash. In other words, you know, right. But it could be Lashon Nofil Aloshon. Just in other words, sometimes the Torah uses the same language, even though it clearly means very, very different things. You know, even though they're in proximity to one another.
I understand. The other mice has done 20 years in the Midbar, and are 10 times worse than this. And you don't find this concept of a Kaddish where you learn that there was Tumah in that. There you go!
So again, I think the way to interpret it, he doesn't quite say this, so if you don't like it, you don't like it. But, you know, they lost out. I mean, in other words, this episode, if you think about it, this may have been a very small incident, relatively speaking. But, you know, the Ego, they got through. The Miraglin, they got through. They go through May Merivo. They lose Moshe and Aaron. It's a big deal. not a little thing. By Kodesh Bom. So, in other words, the Tumah means the absence of the two great Manhigim who led Klal Yisrael for all of those years.
That's Moshe's fault, Aaron's fault. Not the Klal Yisrael, Moshe's fault. Because they made mistakes. And they said,
he hit me first. Right? In other words, it takes two to tangle. They were the ones who, you know, brought the whole event about.
So, according to what you were saying, perhaps the tense is wrong.
Right. By Yikodesh, you have to say. Yeah, right. As a unit, you know, Klal Yisrael. That's why it's singular, as opposed to Yikodeshu. You know, that.
If he was right, he might have said,
right, okay, but you know, the Torah does go back and forth between the singular and the plural, you know, when describing a collective, you know, that does happen, right? But again, you know, it's definitely a very unconventional interpretation, so I just want to bring it to your attention, you know, when finishing off over here. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up next Wednesday night. So wish everyone a good Shabbos.